Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
I'm doing good. You're looking spiffy today.
Spiffy? That's a word. We got to start like some sort of lexicon or something. You know,
dated language.
Dated language. Dying language.
Spiffy.
Spiffy. Speaking of spiffy, do we have that spiffy chef on?
I think we do. Is this the chef that used to...
Chef was... Louis, are you there?
I'm here.
I just want to. You sound kind of like you're in
an aircraft.
In an aircraft or something, or you know, nothing.
I'm not on speakerphone, so and I'm at home, so.
Okay.
I don't know.
Now you were supposed to be here physically, but then something came up, and you are being a civic servant, I understand, today.
I am. I have jury duty, and so we all have to do our services as citizens of this fine country, and so I have to do my part.
Do we have a national anthem soundbite or something?
I was going to say.
We needed that.
He can't get out of it. I got out of mine.
That is another...
The questions they threw at me were not really one to get me out of anything, so I was like, okay.
Yeah, we might actually have to do a show about, you know, skill sets as you get older,
getting out of jury duty.
Right.
So... For people who are listening, and you know, we're just bantering off here, but
people have no idea who our guest is. He's famous.
He's actually pretty famous.
Uh-oh, sorry, I'm doing two things.
What's going on there, Paul?
Let's stop. There we go.
Government interference.
Yes.
We're talking about getting out of jury duty, and look what happens. Okay.
FCC.
Yeah, you know, I'm really, really thrilled to have you on this show, and I am not even going to attempt to do you justice, so I'm just going to ask you to introduce yourself.
Well, thank you. Well, again, you know, we've been talking for, you know, weeks about doing this, and,
yeah.
and thanks so much for having me on the show.
Our pleasure.
Right now, I am a chef instructor or a chef professor at Los Angeles Mission College, and it's at the Culinary Arts Institute, and I've been there for about 4 years now, and I teach a lot of the culinary arts classes and hospitality and restaurant management type of classes.
Right.
But my background is I joined the military, and in the military I actually happened to get recruited to work at Camp David.
Yeah, but hold on. Let's just back up for a minute, because I thought it was very interesting. I found it fascinating that you actually went into the military, and I believe it was the Navy, correct?
Correct. Yes.
Okay, you went into the Navy because they had a strong culinary sort of educational training program.
That was something that I actually asked all the recruiters. I went to all the
fascinating.
Branches. Yeah, and my father, he was actually in the Marines. And one summer in the 90s, about 1991, he said, well, you know, you have two choices. You go to college or you go to military.
Right.
And at that point in my life, I was just like, in college, you know, I wanted to be in the kitchen. And that's kind of like growing up through high school, I worked in the kitchen, worked my way through the ranks in the kitchen, and I was just in that mode in my life.
We had a show a couple of weeks ago where it was Finding Your Passion, okay?
Right.
And you found your passion. Now, how old do you think you were when you just like had a conscious awareness that this was something you wanted to do?
When I was 7.
Wow.
When I was 7 years old, my mom, we grew up in the Philippines. I was born and raised in the Philippines. And my mom she worked as the executive housekeeper at the Intercontinental Hotel in Manila.
Mm-hmm.
And so she used to bring us to work almost, you know, every day, so to speak, when we were not at school. And she would drop us off either at the pool or drop us off in one of the rooms. and I wanted to be dropped off in the kitchen. And so I just, for some reason, I just loved the energy that was in there.
See, I mean, I grew up on job sites. My dad is a civil engineer, and I kind of did homeworks on job sites, and I can kind of relate to the fact that, you know, you are a bit of product of your environment, if you will, and if you happen to be lucky to be exposed to something that you actually get a joy and a passion and a certain sense of comfort, if you will, from, that sometimes it does lead to be the path that you pursue. And so you went into the Navy, and it sounds kind of funny because it sounds like you actually interviewed the military, the branches of the military service to see which one basically fit you best.
Which one could teach you to cook.
Right, exactly. Or, and everybody was saying, because I kept on asking, well, who eats the best?
Right.
And so I said, well, one group said the Air Force because they had more budget, and then the other group said the Navy. And I was more into ships than flying. And so I said, well, you know what? I'd rather be on a ship, so that's where I want to be. Because if I work, my whole thing is if I work at an aircraft carrier feeding 3,000 people, feeding 30 people is not going to be a big deal.
No.
So that was my philosophy.
Was your dad in the military?
He was in the Marines.
He was in the Marines.
So,
all right.
Yeah, he was in the Marines.
And he told you, don't go in the Marines because they don't eat well. They're eating
well,
K-rations.
He said, well, if you go to the Marines, you're going to be in the front line.
Put me on a boat.
Yeah.
But you know, it's really funny, right? Because we hear. I mean, I remember hearing growing
a ship.
Up,
only
a
the
ship.
Only boat is a sub. Everything
a
else is a ship.
A ship.
Everything is that
right.
correct? Everything else is
that
a
is
ship except a submarine is a boat.
Wow, Paul. Mm-hmm. I bow to your knowledge.
Yeah. See?
Yeah.
And that's and actually the highest clearance is on a sub because of all the nukes.
Sure. So you've heard it here, ladies and gentlemen. It may be that an army marches on its stomach, but a navy basically has better chefs.
Yes,
right there.
Yes, and so, it's all navy chefs at the White House.
Ah,
really?
Okay. Now we're getting to where you're because you didn't tell us. Hold on. Before the White House. Wait. This guy's got way too much good stuff. Okay. So before the White House. You happened to be stationed or, you know, had the opportunity to be of service somewhere else. Where was that?
This was at Camp David Presidential
Camp
Retreat.
Camp David, yes. He said that earlier. Yeah right.
Wow. So,
and Camp David, I was there for President Bush Sr.
Okay.
And I was one of the members called the Laurel Team. And Laurel Team are the Navy personnel that took care of the President, the First Lady, the guests of the president and any dignitaries that went up to Camp David.
Can you name drop or?
Yes, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Demi Moore, Bruce Willis, Amy Grant, George Strait, and then Prime Minister Mulroney, and John Majors.
Wow.
Those are pretty much everybody that we cooked for and served at Camp David.
Now, do you still cook for them? Do they come over to your house ever or anything? No, probably not.
You know, once in a while. No, I'm just kidding. No, they don't. But, I mean, it's one of those opportunities where, you know, you're a couple of feet away from the President of the United States.
Now, you're telling me that at these state dinners in Washington at the White House, because then you went on to the White House and you were the chef there, and at Camp David and other things, these are all Navy chefs? They don't rotate it through the branches?
No, these are all Navy.
That says it right there, then, who has the best chef.
Exactly.
Right.
And I did not know this until I was at Camp David and I met some people. And when I started going through Camp David, the process, background clearance, this is when I really found out that, you know what, it's only the Navy personnel that ends up going to Camp David or going to, you know, to the White House to cook.
And how many chefs?
Other branches.
How many chefs are there on staff at both of those locations, roughly?
So on the Navy side, because there's two sides. You have the resident side, which is I worked under Chef Walter Scheib, who's the executive chef back then. So there's that side, the main resident side, which is civilian. And then on the Navy side, we had about, I would say, 30 to 40 Navy personnel. And you're going from a commander, officer, master chief, all the way down, and I was actually the youngest Navy personnel that they recruited at the White House.
Now you have to explain that because I just don't want to understand. You got two different chef teams. You've got a private chef team,
and we have a So they have a civilian chef that takes care of the residents and all the dignitary residents in the main center. So if you look at the White House, you have the East Wing, you have the center, and then you have, you know, the West Wing.
The famous West Wing, where the offices are.
Exactly. And so that's, we worked for a small restaurant in the basement called the White House Staff Mess.
And how long were you there for, Louis?
I was there for about 3.5 years, and then I got another duty station in Hawaii.
Oh, for you.
Now, I got to ask a question, because having never been inside the White House, we're always curious what happens in there. So this is, are there multiple restaurants? Are there multiple serving things, or is there just one kitchen?
No, there's one restaurant, but there's three different dining rooms. The restaurant is located right next door to the NSA. So
the bunker downstairs.
And we used to bring in food in there all the time, and we would look at all the monitors and be like, okay, what's going on around the world?
Oh, my goodness. So you have no clearance. You could just walk in and say, oh, look at that. Get out of here. Give me the French fries and get out of here. No.
I had a Yankee White, which is a top secret clearance back then. I don't have it now, but because you lose it after a while.
Yeah.
But they go through everybody's background. And that's why it was really easy for me to transition from Camp David to the White House.
Sure.
And the reason being was Clinton, won the presidency. He started, you know, downsizing the Navy. I know if you guys remember this around 1992-93. So there was a downsizing. And that's when somebody called up and said, hey, we have a billet open, and, you know, if anybody's interested. And back then, you know, I was single. I was actually living on Camp David because I was still one of the, you know, E2, E3s that was, that's the rank, E2 and E3. And so they, at that point, I could just, like, pack everything in my Honda Civic and just, you know, go.
Just
go
pull up
to
Camp David and say which way's.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Pulling the gate back there. What's Camp David like? I've never seen pictures of it. I know it's very rustic.
Woodsy.
It's woodsy. That's all I know. Yeah. Where is it? In Maryland, I think?
It's in Fairmont, Maryland.
Yeah.
Really close to Fredericksburg, Gaithersburg. It's about an hour and a half from D.C., mm-hmm. and so it's not that bad, you know, to go back up and down. I used to hang out with a bunch of Marines, and we would go to Bethesda, or we would go to to Georgetown, and, you know, just for the evening, and then drive back up, you know, when we were having fun. But yeah, it's very rustic. It's, you know, you can Google Catoctin Mountains,
mm-hmm.
and that's where it's located.
Is it big, and there are lots of buildings, and it's just sort of like a giant camp or something?
Catoctin Mountains is a national forest owned by the government. And so, so Camp David is right there.
But, I mean, inside the camp, there are lots of buildings, and it's like sort of a giant resort or something?
Inside camp, exactly. Inside a camp, there's a lot of cabins.
Hmm.
And so everything, like, for instance, the main cabin that the president stays, it's kind of like the mini White House, that's called Aspen.
Hmm.
And now the entertainment cabin, which is where we worked, and we were both stationed in Aspen and Laurel. And so every cabin is actually named after a tree,
mm-hmm.
you know, or a plant. So we have poplar, we have oak, we have maple, and we have juniper. And so there's all these different names for a certain type of tree or plant.
I'm going to impress Rod again here. Do you know, Rod, why it got its name, Camp David?
Why it got its name, Camp David?
Yes. I know this.
No, actually, I don't.
It was named after Eisenhower's son, David. He built it.
So what was, and here's a question for you guys, what was the original name?
There you go.
Oh.
That I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Before.
Way to have my back there. Okay.
I'm trying to show off. Thanks. Now I look like an idiot.
It's called Shangri-La. No. Shangri-La.
It really was? It was called Shangri-La? So did they buy, it was like Shangri-La. A private camp, and they bought it for the government? They must have or something?
It was called, they called it Shangri-La first because Shangri-La was this mystic, you know, location that nobody knew. And it was, you know,
it has other names, by the way, in Vegas, but it means something.
That's an interesting question. So you're a single guy, you're up at Camp David, you live on there. Are there, like, chicks around and stuff? Are there, like, places to go hang out? Are there bars to pick up girls? And then you take them back to Camp David, or no?
No, you can't do that, no.
Hey, baby, let's go back to Camp David.
That's hilarious. Okay. All right. I'm reeling it back in here. All right. So, okay.
Rod wanted to know that, but he didn't want to ask.
Thank you. Yeah. I was actually holding cue cards up on the wall. It's like, ask him the question.
Any chicks around there?
Chicks at Camp David. Well, I'm just wondering, you know, then is it a regular bunk or do you actually, are there cabins for that? Anyway.
Well, we had our own, like, enlisted personnel barracks and actually shared a room. It was about, like, probably 700 square feet, probably less actually, 500
wow.
square feet, and with four other guys.
But you have to live a monastic life then, because there's no female accompaniment
Pretty much, unless you get invited by somebody outside of Camp David, which, you know, that's really was. I was at Camp David probably about 10 months.
Sounds like
then
summer camp,
transferred.
You know?
Yeah.
You just
sounds like summer camp.
When you're on camp, you can't do anything. You got to get a hookup with the locals.
Yeah.
It was interesting because I grew up in the East Coast.
This is not the show I thought we were having.
No, not at all.
No.
Dating at Camp David.
Okay.
There'd be a book. You know, what's the real life, the funny. Sex life at Camp David here?
That's hilarious.
You know, if somebody from the jury pool is actually listening to this,
oh my
there's probably grounds for him to be dismissed.
That's
at this
right,
point.
Exactly.
Oh,
okay.
My God.
That would be fascinating, though, the sex life at the White House or the sex life. Because there's lots of people who work there. I mean, are they having trysts in the in the laundry room?
The people who are married, they get to live off base.
Oh, okay.
Those who are single and like E2 and E3 as far as their ranks, they get to stay in Camp David, you know, because one of the things too about the Navy is that, you know, you're brand new in the Navy, you get your freedom, you just basically got out of culinary school, you know, and so you're out there looking to have fun, so they're trying to keep people on camp and under a watchful eye. So to speak.
But they must sneak off with each other. Come on.
You know, this show is starting to sound more like the episode of Sex and the City where Fleet Week hits New York by the minute.
Yeah. No, we don't want to go there too far, but wouldn't you think there must be, because there's men and women working together, anytime there's men and women working together, like on ships or anything else, there must be a little hanky-panky, a little fooling around.
Well, and this is the reason why women, they're trying to just kind of stop this from happening. It's really hard to get women on the sub because of this point.
Yeah.
Is right. Because if that happens, the submarine does not care to go up, you know, if they're underwater for
Careful.
8 months, they're underwater for 8 months.
Yeah.
8 months.
Right. And I mean, you're underwater for 8 months or 6 months or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and you're locked in this tight space together.
Yeah. I'm so biting my lip right now to not go down tangents that I would never recover from here with bad old jokes, etc. I will say one thing though. Okay, I want to be on the record. Okay, I am absolutely supportive of women in the military. Okay, I think it really is an issue you could extrapolate can happen in any environment, work environment,
I'm
where
sure.
people spend a lot of time together in not necessarily only close quarters.
Let's
but
say
a
you're
lot
in a research
together.
Place up in down in Antarctica or something, and there's men and women, and they're single, and or maybe they're not single, and they're just locked in a place together. You would think magic's going
to
happen.
So I'm going to try to now bring this back to nutritional discussion, Paul.
I wanted to really know about this.
I need a water spray bottle or something to spray him in the corner. I need to spray him. Get off the furniture, Paul. Okay. So the cool thing about it, now you have a book. I think you just came up with
this
a book.
This book is Sex in the White House.
No, it's not. It's actually got to do with like little things or 110 things or Paul Louis, what is the name of the book?
So it's 101 Things I Learned in Culinary School. And so the whole premise about this, the original author of the architectural school presented this to the publisher, which is Hache Groups, which is part of Grand Central Publishing out of New York, pretty much said, you know what, we need to do this for a lot of different subject matter. So there is a, you know, there's film school, there's business school.
Yeah, I noticed that.
The culinary school.
Yeah, it's almost like a common theme series with the same kind of title, but it depending on what the focus is. Yeah. No, don't go there.
All right.
I can see him going there.
All right, I won't.
God, where's that water bottle?
Won't say anything.
I'm going to need a sound bite for that, by the way. Okay, the water spray. Yeah. Get off the furniture, Paul. Okay, so, and you just, that's just been released, right, Louis?
Actually, it's been around, the book was published in 2010. So it's actually, it's in 10 different languages now.
Wow. Congrats.
And it's all over the world. And it's really interesting whenever students send me, you know, pictures in Korea and say, hey, chef, you know, I found your book over here. And so it's really, really, exciting.
So share, you know? So share five things from the 101 things.
Yeah, give us a couple.
So, a couple of things that I put on there, and they're really, really quick, history bites. There's one called, like, kitchen lingo, you know? So that's one of the lessons, and it goes on to, you know, what's in the weeds, you know, what does make it cry mean,
dragging. Make it cry? I don't know.
What does make it cry mean?
I don't know what make it cry.
So add onions.
Oh.
So you add onions to something, you make it cry. Yeah. In the weeds, that you're running behind.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, check the score. You know, how many tickets are coming through.
Okay.
You know, down the Hudson. You know, so
down the Hudson. I don't know that one.
Yes. So down the Hudson. So that's into the garbage disposal.
down to Hudson. Oh my goodness.
You know,
Hudson
now,
River.
Now we don't have time on the show, but I would love to know where those came from because. Somebody in California didn't come up with down the Hudson.
No, the Hudson River. Yeah,
again, I'm from the East Coast, so I grew up in Wilmington, Delaware, and I hung around in Philly, and we used to go to New York all the time.
Yeah,
and I think this is one thing that I heard from my chef, who's when I was growing up, and I was in my 16, 17, and he used to say this all the time, and so you know, so those that kind of stuck with me. But I don't say that here in California because they don't really know what that means.
No.
But this is something that's a kitchen lingo that I kind of picked up.
So if we got Anthony Bourdain in here from the CNN show where he goes and eats all over the world here, he'd know this stuff because he cooked in New York.
Right.
He was in New York.
Right, exactly.
Down the Hudson without a serving spoon.
So that's one lesson. And then there's another lesson called, you know, there are only two ways to cook.
Okay.
And then people ask me, okay, so what are the two ways? So you have dry cooking and you have moist cooking. And then you break it down from dry cooking method and then a moist cooking method.
It's fascinating.
So the lessons are very, very quick.
Can I ask you another lesson, though, that is obvious after we've talked about? Is there sex in the kitchen? No.
I
can't imagine there could be.
That's the 102 and beyond version of the book.
How do you have sex in the kitchen, right, on the hot griddle here?
Well, that's... Why are you taking me there?
Rod wants to go there. I almost did. I know he wants to take the bait and run.
Dry and cold and wet cooking.
Dry and moist cooking.
Moist, I mean.
Yeah.
Okay, so... There is a reason why Louis is on this show today.
Oh, this sir. I'm just fascinated by this. He's got me thinking all these thoughts now here.
Okay, and by the way, you guys did notice that the show is from 12 to 1, right?
Yes.
So this is the lunch hour. We are feeding the souls and the minds of people.
Yeah.
So the thing that really was fascinating, we've been talking back and forth about this, and we plan to have you here physically. I know that, you know, we had to acquiesce and let the government have you today, but we do plan to have you here physically, and I think we've got a cool show that we're working on developing.
I was hoping he was going to cook something.
Well, yeah, hey, maybe he brings us lunch. I don't know.
That could be something, Clara.
One of the things that I was well fascinated about, and I thought from your position, having worked in those environments that, you know, huge, huge name locations and dealing with all kinds of personalities, God, I can only imagine the stories you could tell.
Yeah.
But you also dealt with people in different age brackets. You dealt with people even that were, you know, that aged while they were in the presidency, people that got older. And the fascinating conversation I was having with you before a couple months ago was, you know, in your role as a culinary chef or an instructor, today we eat differently than we ate 10 years ago. And people, as they get older, I think, have an awareness increase, or maybe they don't. But we also have an issue of an epidemic of obesity. And mm-hmm. so all the fascinating conversation for me is, I don't want to go eat at a senior center where basically the food is prepared and served to me on a laminated tabletop with maybe my name on it, and that's the same chair I sit in every week. As a baby boomer, even though I'm getting older, my approach, and we've talked about the language mm-hmm. to define this, that we are just now developing, there are different things I want as a boomer,
right.
as far as nutrition. There may be nutritional reprogramming, wellness awareness, all this stuff. I know my body doesn't process things the same way, but I also don't want to eat cardboard.
Yeah, right.
So there
could there be a better example than Bill Clinton, perhaps, who probably had reportedly one of the worst diets of any modern president, and literally ate, you know, donuts and fried stuff all the time, and then ended up, after leaving the White House, having a heart attack or heart problem. I don't know if he actually had a heart attack or not, or got
right. But Bill is actually
now he's a vegetarian.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
What's really interesting is that actually started, I mean, yes, he used to run around with the Secret Service and then stop into, you know, McDonald's for a burger, you know.
But that actually was true and not just SNL skit?
No, that was actually true. And then eventually they built in a track inside the South Lawn, and so now you could actually run around inside. And that was one of the things that, you know, First Lady Hillary Clinton did back then, you know. So she made sure that okay, if you're going to run, you're going to run in a track, so this doesn't divert you to going to anywhere else. And then second,
yeah, the run was just to get out of the White House so he could go get a burger here. That was the only reason he ran, just
yeah.
to get away from her and go get a burger.
And the other thing that she actually did too, and we actually did this as well at the White House staff mess, is we had a Dr. Dean Ornish come in.
Oh, yeah,
and
heart
Dean
doctor.
Ornish, yeah, so he came in and he kind of gave us a lot of tips and says, hey, you know what, you know, instead of frying, why don't you start grilling, start roasting things, do
yeah.
everything that way. And so that's kind of like, that's how whatever we did for the president, it was either grilled or roasted or steamed, where no oils were used. And if we did use oil, you know, they were like, you know, olive oil, which is a little bit more healthier than the other oils out there.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question because I think we're approaching our half point here on the show, and I want to ask you a question relevant to the presidents, and then maybe we'll lead from that into more general population. But from your experience, do you think that those who you served, whether it be celebrities or presidents, were there anybody that is healthier than others? Was it different? Did they have a sort of a common approach to things? I mean, it's a very stressful job. It's a lot of hours. I kind of have a reason for asking because that tends to sometimes drive what people eat and, you know, what they can get their hands on. Do you have any that you think were like healthier, more aware than others? Did they become more aware?
You know what? I'm trying to think back. And,
good or bad
and
example.
Point,
yeah.
Good or, you know what? It's a lot of them loved, like working at the White House, they still loved the fries. They still loved, you know, eating fried food. I mean, you have George Stephanopoulos. You have Dee Dee Myers. Dee Dee Myers was more into salads, so I remember her eating a lot of salads. But George Stephanopoulos, he would actually order a lot of sandwiches, whether it be a club, but then it would always accompany fries. Mm-hmm. Anything that's easy to eat that you don't really need to have a full sit-down meal, because they were always busy running around the West Wing or what have you.
Right.
And so, yeah, you know what? I didn't find anybody that really was either, you know, one spectrum really super healthy and then the other spectrum. Because at that point, you have to realize too, this whole thing in the culinary world really didn't exist. You know, our palates started changing as we saw these shows on TV.
And as we ate. You know,
as we ate.
And so we started getting more familiar. And if you notice, a lot of people, tune in to the Food Networks and a lot of these healthy shows on PBS and whatnot. And then, you know, your show, the more you talk about this, the more people start getting ingrained as far as, like, what are the things they need to look at when looking at a menu?
Although there is some backlash. I think that explains Paula Deen's popularity with Southern cooking and all the, you know, hers is not really that
healthy. I don't think you can stipulate that this is the only way.
Right.
Because people are going to rebel. They're going to want to cheat a little bit. They're going to get that little, you know, treat here and there, and we're all human that way.
I think a lot of it too is, you know, going, and this is for me as well, as we age, you start to take a look at, and not a lot of people do this, but I do this, but you start to be aware of your knees, your joints, your shoulders.
Tell me about it.
Your neck, you know, and how you stand, you know, am I standing straight or am I bent, you know, and then you take a look at your gut, and you look at your gut and say, okay, you know, what do I do about this?
Why is Rod that pointing at me as you're doing all this?
I'm not pointing at you. I'm trying to find my toes by looking past my gut.
Every time you said something, he looked up from his notes and looked at me and gave me that glare.
Wow, a little self-awareness going on there. Being nice, too.
Yeah, that's too funny. So that's kind of one of the things that... And then exercise. What kind of exercise are we doing?
Right.
What kind of exercise are we getting into?
Look, I mean, I'll admit on the air, you know, bad habits, okay? Eating too late, running around all day and not really even having smaller portions of food and just kind of like starving yourself, and then you're feeding yourself, and then, you know, it's just this whole vicious circle. And then also on top of that, not going out there and actually doing the simple math. Burn some calories so that you can actually intake some calories. You know, it's what you put in, what you put out. We're going to take a break right now, Louis, but we'll come back, and I really want to talk about this because our focus primarily is baby boomers, and the fact that, you know, we have this huge population that is living longer.
But and you were there when the first baby boom. We were there during the Clinton years or the Bush years.
Yes.
Both.
Bush and Clinton. Yes.
So you were there for the first baby boomer president.
Right. Exactly.
Exactly.
We'll be right back. Thanks, Louis.
No problem.
If you are like the majority of Americans, you want to continue living in a familiar environment throughout your maturing years. In fact, according to many surveys, 82% of homeowners overwhelmingly prefer to age in place, which means living in their current homes safely, independently, and comfortably, regardless of age or ability level. With over 30 years of combined experience in residential, commercial, hospitality, and destination resorts fields, Your Home for a Lifetime is a company dedicated to empowering you to maintain your quality of life and independence by helping you make your house your home for a lifetime. Do you want to reorganize or remodel your home? Do you want to add a full bathroom and possibly a bedroom on the main floor? Are you looking to make your kitchen more functional? Is an aging parent moving in, or your child is moving out, or even moving back in? Call Your Home for a Lifetime at 949-492-1872 or check them out on the web at yourhomeforalifetime.com and find out how they can help you make your house your home for a lifetime.
All right, we're going to learn all that more here. You know, it's amazing to me, we're talking about presidential diets and presidential how things have changed.
That was not what you were talking about during the break.
No,
you spent the break trying to come up with names for sex and food. I mean,
well, I think that's still a fascinating series. Sex in the White House has got to sell. Sex in the Submarine's got to sell here. But what occurred to me is, because I'm a big history nut here, you know, at one time you had Grover Cleveland, the heaviest president we've ever had, who weighed over 300 pounds and supposedly got stuck in the bathtub once when he was in the White House. He was so huge, and they had to literally pry him out. That's the urban legend. And now we're down to Bill Clinton, the first baby boomer president. And then following that, you went immediately back to George Bush Sr., who was the last of the World War II presidents.
Right.
So you saw that contrast between our father's generation and us, the baby boomers. Here, talk about that, the different diets. Were they all the same?
So he was there literally For both.
Yes,
like,
right.
It's true. Our focus is baby boomers, and you were there feeding the first baby boomer president, having served and fed the last, call it, World War II
president.
President.
Right.
So,
so,
you know,
right at that moment when the two generations, in the same way that you talked about Camp David earlier, when Eisenhower and handed the keys to JFK, the second youngest president we ever had here, Teddy Roosevelt being the youngest, there was that generational gap, too. If, for example, when Eisenhower showed up that day to the inauguration, to tell you a little fascinating story, he wore the old-fashioned top hat.
Right.
And Kennedy went without anything on his head, just the visual change in style.
For those that are joining us after the break, since Paul, you know, just went right into where we left off, let me just mention who we have on the air.
Yes.
Okay, we have really a special guest today. It's Chef Louis Aguirre's of Presidential Culinary Services, and he gets to call his website that because he actually worked, as we found out, both in the Navy, on a ship, I was told, not a boat,
yes,
and was also at Camp David,
yes,
and then he also served at the White House, from 1993 through 1996, wasn't it, Louis, or something like that?
That's correct, yeah, towards the end of 1996, that's, and then I went over to...
Hawaii, you said, I think, right?
Yeah.
You actually were a chef for a was it an admiral or who was it?
It was an admiral. Yeah, it's the admiral in charge of all the ships in the Pacific Fleet.
Wow.
So it was called SINCPAC Fleet, Commander in Chief Pacific Fleet, and
Paul just saluted.
And then
you currently are vice chair, I think, of Culinary Arts Department, Los Angeles Mission College, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So let's go back to my question. All right, so you saw Bill Clinton eat, and the reputation is he ate lousy, that he ate crap food all the time here, and then he was always fighting weight. And then you saw George Bush come back in the last of the World War II generation. Any difference in their eating style preferences, what they called for, or they're all just busy guys and they just...
Well, they were also different age when they were president.
Yeah, very different.
Different age. I think, you know, with when I first noticed up in Camp David, again, you know, people were not really... health conscious then.
Right.
You know, you ate according to, you know, the region that you are familiar with. And, you know, him growing up being part of Texas, so you have a lot of that Texan kind of diet. Mm-hmm. And then he was also from kind of Bunkport, you know, for Bush Sr. So you have a lot of the New England type of cuisine that has, you know, heavy on cream, right. Heavy on potatoes. So you have that mix. You know, and then with Clinton... You know, he was willing to try a lot of different American cuisine, where you have, you know, the Southwest or, you know, Tex-Mex. Sometimes he would go into Tex-Mex as well. And then, of course, a lot of the cuisine from, you know, Arkansas or the South, you know, where you have, you know, you can have, or even from Louisiana. So
fried, everything fried.
Everything fried,
yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, it tastes great.
Tastes great.
It's just, you know, I basically...
Horrible for you.
If you eat too much of it.
But, I mean, everything in moderation.
Like, absolutely.
I talked to my mom, and I asked her, I said, you know, it's, you know, we're talking about this, you know, and I asked her, Mom, what are the kind of things that you started changing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of it was, you know, well, first of all, the first thing she said was, well, when we came to this country, that's when I gained weight. And so that was key number one, because, you know, the food in the Philippines were completely different than the food over here.
Well, we also talk about portions, right? Sizes.
And portions, yeah. And that was another thing she said, too. Our portions over here, you know, I mean, take a look at the $1, you know, menu that you get from McDonald's, and you get, like, a whole soda that's like a, you know, 32 ounces.
Yeah.
And it's just like that, you know, and that's why you have childhood obesity. That's why you have... You know, juvenile diabetes.
Right. No, I actually realized that. Not that I wasn't aware of it, but it really came back home to me when we were on our honeymoon, and we traveled through Spain. We traveled mostly through Spain. Right. And it's fascinating. I mean, it gets down to the size of the plate. that is considered a normal size plate to serve on.
Interesting.
Because imagine if you have a larger size plate and you put a certain quantity of food on it. And if you serve that up, the eye sees not only the food, but it also sees all the empty space on the plate.
Right. So you either feel cheated or you feel like you got a lot,
exactly,
depending on the size of the plate.
So it is something that I can say for myself, I have become more and more aware of as I got older, and I definitely do like to eat. Okay. In fact, I'm accused of basically, littering my social media with food porn every time I go somewhere. Is basically, see, I'm bringing it back around.
Oh,
Paul.
The porn. Okay. We're coming back to where we started.
Food porn. which it fascinates me that there's actually even a term in the serving the.
Well, yeah, it's like everything. It's so funny because my wife Agnes, she's like, oh, you need to tag that hashtag food porn. You got to tag it here. You got to go foodies. Culinary arts. It's amazing. With social media and
it's acceptable to use the word porn and food in a sentence.
What is food porn? I guess I'm too old.
Whatever floats your boat, or in this case, your plate.
You on, huh?
Whatever turns your turns
you on. It's food that excites you and makes you want to go back for more.
Okay.
That's pretty much
so that, ladies and gentlemen, it is the official definition of food porn.
According
to the chef from the White House.
The White House, you can't beat that.
Please don't quote me.
Now, let me ask you another question I was dying
I think
to
that's
ask
another
you.
Book, though, Louis. I think you need another book called Food Porn.
I have a lot of back burner books right now.
When I was in the entertainment industry, I was a press agent, and I had the opportunity to go to the Playboy Mansion, the famous Playboy Mansion, once for an event.
Nice.
And I got to go around and see all the cool stuff and the famous grotto and all those things. Nobody was dancing naked in it, unfortunately, when I was there. But the thing that I always heard about the Playboy Mansion, the urban legend is that any time of the day or night, you could go down to the kitchen if you were staying there, if you were a guest there, and you could ask for anything. And they would literally try and trip up the chef. I want some weird Thai dish. No, I want fresh lobster. No, I want this. And they would supposedly go out of their way. You could get anything. I'm assuming that at the White House or at Camp David, somebody walks in and suddenly wants something really bizarre. You can't say, we'll go find it. You make it.
You make it. But another thing, too, is that the chef on the residence side, there is a small kitchen on the second floor just for the first family. And so they would make hamburgers or pizzas for Chelsea Clinton, and then they would make certain dishes for the president, or they would be already ready-to-eat items in the fridge for the president or for the first lady. So they did take care of them. So, but none of – I mean, you stayed late. I mean, I know the resident chefs stayed late, but they didn't stay, like, past 11:30.
So you can't wake up at 2 a.m. and say, I suddenly need pickles and ice cream or something.
Well, I was going to ask, I'm just going to ask you the same two presidents that we talked about.
Right.
Did Bush Sr. have snacks that he preferred, and did Bill Clinton have snacks that he preferred?
Sure, I'm sure they did.
Well, what are those? I'm interested.
All right.
Well, for me, the...
This might be top secret.
I didn't experience...
going for it.
No. I didn't experience any of that. So I don't... when I was there early in the morning, and I experienced, can I have coffee, eggs, and bacon? And
normal
usually
stuff,
he would come out and with shorts and a t-shirt, and it was like, Louis, can I get some coffee? And a lot of times we would have this all, ready, because we already knew he wanted to have, like, country potatoes, some bacon, and some eggs.
Okay.
That's for Bush Sr.
Okay.
And we would have that. But as far as, like, late-night snacks, never experienced it. We did have to go to one time. We had to go, I think it's either Amy Grant or Demi Moore forgot toothpaste, and we didn't have any on camp, so one of the Navy personnel had to go down, and it takes about maybe 10 minutes, had to go down to the town, get some, toiletries, and then bring it back up.
Was there a preferred brand of toothpaste?
Oh, who knows? Anything you want.
No, it was just...
So it wasn't like that you could just, people were, because I picture you've got all sorts of diplomats, you've got foreign dignitaries, you've got people of different ages, you got all sorts of people from around the country, and then it would just be a hodgepodge of things, or is it just a pretty set menu, and here's what we're offering today in the cafeteria?
It's pretty much a set menu. Like, for instance, and when I come down and see you guys, I'll bring a lot of my memorabilia, so you'll get to see.
Oh, cool! That's awesome.
A lot of the menus that we have, and one of the most memorable dinners I did was Nelson Mandela when he, you know, it was like 1995.
Fabulous, yeah.
And so I'll bring that in, you know, to the studio, show you guys. But it's a set menu, especially for us. They either call it in and have one of the interns pick it up, or they come down and pick it up. So a question that everybody asks me all the time is, yeah, did you ever see Monica Lewinsky? And we saw.
We're just coming back to the sex issue all the time, one way or another here. We keep.
Right. It's,
I am so rolling my eyes at you, Paul, right now.
I started something here.
But no, Monica Lewinsky and other interns, you know, would come down, pick up the food, because the staff members would be busy. You know, so you got David Gergen, you got Stephanopoulos, Myers. So all of them, even like, you know, what's his name? Leon Panetta, Podesta, all of them. All of them were a lot of times they were on first name basis to me, you know, and they were really, really very nice people, you know, and I really enjoyed working with them. So, yeah.
Well, see, it's funny, right? Because you definitely have an intimate relationship with the person preparing your food, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, it doesn't get more intimate than that. The person is preparing the stuff you're going to put in your body.
The guy shaving you and the guy feeding you.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, okay.
Right.
So let's just step away from that, and we could be talking about this thing forever. I mean, I really look forward to having you in the studio for
awesome
sure.
Yeah,
but I wanted to just talk about this. You know, we have a generation that is getting older. You are teaching a whole bunch of people to basically prepare food for the market that's out there, and the market currently is made up of a lot of people turning 65 every day, 10,000 people a day.
Amazing.
Turning 65 as baby boomers. Their nutritional habits are different. You know, you got millennials right behind them that are equally a large group or somewhat of a large group that is going to also go through this sort of transition of diet, nutrition, health needs, etc. We're staying older longer, but I read something that said that we're not necessarily healthier.
Mm.
And so, you know, obviously everybody knows we have an issue with obesity in this country. I don't want to get into that necessarily, but we do have a need to continue to educate ourselves and reprogram ourselves. Another thing that I read that was I found very interesting as a comparison between millennials and boomers was that boomers, and this was in relevance to specifically with you because I know you also consult on restaurants, is that you know, the bottom line is, what food am I going to put on somebody's on my menu that people are going to buy, right? And who's my target customer? If you are a millennial, you are very interested in the menu, but your focus of interest tends to be, I guess, what from what I've read, is the ingredients that are in the food, which is fascinating in itself because
which a lot of them you get to see a lot of them look at things like farm to table.
Right.
So if it's organic, if it's fresh, if all these different ingredients, they have a little bit more of a holistic approach to what they're eating.
But what I found very interesting is that in that same article, it talked about boomers as also having an heightened awareness, but that when they read that menu, they read the menu not necessarily from the perspective of what ingredients are in it, they read it from the nutritional value of what's in it.
That's correct.
And I thought that was very interesting differentiator that you spoke to the age, maybe, you know, that a millennial is figuring it, what is my taste buds going to do?
Yeah.
And the boomer is counting calories or looking at it from that perspective. And so, again, the question I have is where you're educating and you're preparing people to basically go out there and provide culinary experiences for this generation, this marketplace that is wealth wise and discretionary income wise is still a lot of boomers and the millennials. What do you factor that in? How does that translate into how you educate them?
Well, a lot of times the first thing you got to do is look at your demographics. So what's your demographics in this area? If you're looking at Newport Beach, right, then you're going to look at a different demographics versus if you say Santa Monica.
Right.
You know, and so, but we always want to kind of give respect to all diners, so to speak. So when you're creating your menu, you're going to keep it simple. You're going to keep it, you know, easy to read. And at the same time, you can direct, and this is part of the job of the front of the house, you know, the wait staff, to be able to direct people to say, hey, you know, this item right here would be great for you because this one here is you know, high in calcium.
You're fat. No.
No. You know,
sensitivity training.
Right. And so, you know, you're looking at different needs.
What about, this is a question I've always had. I was in the restaurant business for a while. I had an Irish pub and we did food and I've worked in a restaurant writer. I'm pretty into going out to eat. And I'm always wondering whether or not the chefs and the owners see themselves as trying to lead people's taste buds or educate them or just serve them what they want. And if they just serve them what they want, how do we ever develop new trends, new things here? So are you just reacting to what they're asking for, or are you at the same time trying to suggest and lead them somewhere?
I think the change has happened where you're trying to lead people to a certain direction.
I agree.
You know, now it's come to a point where back in the day, you know, when you dealt with your purveyors and say, okay, what's popular? Okay, let's serve the cheesesteak, let's serve the fries. That's what people want. But now it's you're kind of saying, wait a minute, how about we serve it this way,
right?
And let's lead them this direction. And a lot of chefs would you know, in a nice way, saying, hey, you know, if you really don't like our menu or our restaurant, a lot of them will kind of, you know, you won't go back there because that might not be something you like to eat.
Well, and
you
go ahead, Louis, finish your thought.
A lot of times the consumer makes a conscious decision, oh, I really like this, and I really want to support this chef. And a lot of times, that's what we want. We want, you know, we want the consumers to say, hey, you know, be open-minded to what is going on out there, because we are trying to, you know, address a need, and this is what we're trying to give you. But if the consumer is hard-pressed on certain habits that they have dining, that's where the issue comes.
Okay, when we have you back in the studio next time, I do want to plant the seed. Okay, I also find that a lot of the boomers, the trends or the research shows that a lot of them actually prepare their own food. That a lot of them actually, about 80% of the older consumer, 55 plus especially, they have eating occasions at home. It's not necessarily the going out component only. And here's the seed I want to plant, and we want to discuss this on an upcoming show. Going back to sort of senior centers, which are basically facilities provided as an amenity from a lot of cities in usually very key locations in the community. The way to purvey food has been you show up, there's meals, you sit at a table, you eat, and then you basically guest bust away. That profile of end user is not the same one that's coming into that age bracket. So wouldn't something, for example, as a chef who basically is a celebrity chef or somebody who has a nutritional chef-based thing, doing the equivalent of like an educational seminar, like almost like a sur le table kind of preparation kitchen, where you bring people in, you reprogram their, you help them reprogram their, or re-educate them about their eating and nutritional habits in preparing really great tasting food, but it's also nutrition. And that basically that becomes something that they take on and take to their own home. Almost like teaching someone to fish versus giving them fish. This is teaching them how to prepare their own food. Those facilities that are prime location, paid for with large commercial kitchens, could really be incubators for that kind of re-education.
I agree, and I think that's something that, you know, if I wasn't teaching and if I wasn't doing what I'm doing now,
right,
that's an avenue where I'd like to go into, because of the fact that, you know, I've done some private chefing, you know, when I got to LA, and, you know, going in and doing, you know, meals for low sodium or gluten free or what have you, those are things that you see rampant now, and it's happening. A couple of weeks ago, we just got done having a raw vegan superfoods seminar over at the college.
Wow.
And the amount of you know, baby boomers that attended it was amazing.
Well,
you know, we have over 100 people, and so it was awesome.
You know, It's been a real pleasure, really. And I think
likewise.
We have enjoyed it as much. I hate to let you go and basically be now in jury duty after this, because what a letdown that is. Right? But I really look forward to having you again, and we'll schedule you, in the next. I'll talk to you this week, and we'll figure out what's a good time maybe in June to do that. I think we discussed possibly June 10th or that Wednesday.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, that's a good day for me.
So I want you to take a minute, just tell people how to get hold of you and what's your website. And
so my website is presidentialchef.com. So you can just follow me there. You can actually, you can Google me, and you can find me on Instagram as well, or Twitter. It's at @LOUIS.EGUARAS, Louis dot Aguaras. If you guys want to email me any questions or anything like that, it's Chef Louis @presidentialchef.com.
We want to call in a request when you come here. We want to be like the White House and call in a food order.
We've got to let him know in advance, and he'll bring it.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Yeah, yeah. Chef, I have to bring my crew down with me.
Yeah. Chef Louis, thank you so much for being on the Rad Life, and we look forward to having you in studio next time. Thank you all for joining us for another great show, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.